Welcome to the Embrace It series, where women with all types of disabilities can be real, resourceful, and stylish. With each episode, you'll walk or roll away with everyday tips, life hacks, and success stories from community leaders and influencers. So take off your leg braces and stay a while with Lainey and Estella.
Hi, I'm Lainey, and I have CMT.
And I'm Estella, and I also have CMT, a neuromuscular disorder affecting approximately 2.6 million people worldwide.
That's as many as MS. We believe disabilities should never get in the way of looking or feeling good. Both of us wear leg braces and have learned through our own personal journeys to embrace it.
Brought to you by Launchpad 516 Studios. Each episode is designed to challenge your own stigmas and beliefs around disability. We want our listeners to get the most value for their time spent with us. So we interview some of the most empowering disability badasses in the world. Through storytelling, personal experiences, and tips, we're all reminded of our own strengths and endless potential.
For more information and exclusive resources, check out our websites at trend-able.com and hnf-cure.org. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button for future episodes and special promos.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Embrace It podcast. Hey, Lainey.
Hey, Estella.
This next guest, her name is Shawn Horn, and she is a public figure. She's a humanist, a beauty and disability advocate, a Forbes contributor, teacher, a chocolate fiend, and also a ski pole aficionado. Welcome, Shawn.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And, you know, those Instagram bios come in handy, I'll tell you.
Yes.
And Shawn, you, before we even get started, you have like the coolest name spelling ever. Like, I mean, so for everyone's like,
yeah.
Tell us how you spell your name. So how do you say it? Like, and I'm trying, like, because an X is very hard to, like, I don't even know how you begin.
Oh, no, I get it. I wouldn't know how to say it if it wasn't my name either. Yeah, thanks, Dad. It's Shawn or Shian, X-I-A-N, Shawn or Shian.
Such a cool name, Shawn. So welcome. And you're all over the place. I mean, Estella was like, look at this woman. She is blowing up. She's everywhere. And, we recently actually met you in person at the Runway of Dreams fashion show in New York. And I took a picture with you and you now are like, who is this? You're probably like, who is this person in the picture? Because I don't think I got words to each other. Estella's like, Lainey, get in the picture. So I
Well, you're unforgettable because you were the one that didn't remember me, for the record, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I'm old. I don't remember any or faces. So, yeah.
Not at all. But no, I mean, back to the name for a second. I mean, I think this goes back to the Embrace It theme, which is, you know, traversing the world, a little background about me, traversing the world with two shiny ski poles with an X in your name. You know, it's as if, you know, I was meant to stand out in some way. And I think we all are, you know, maybe less, not everybody's as obvious, you know, but there was something to growing up, you know, in a very visible way or a very apparent way, to most of the world, especially in New York City, where I was born and raised and where I'm actually podcasting with you right now. So yeah, I mean, I think again, you know, being named for a Chinese city, not pronounceable, actually makes it so that people will start conversations with you. How do I say that? And so as I've made a lot of friends because people can't pronounce my name. So there are some perks. I always joke with my friend Brian, who also has cerebral palsy, that we're going to start a podcast called Cerebral Perksy about all the perks.
I love that. That is like a fantastic name. And you, by the way, for the record, you have me beat. Lainey Ishbia is, even though it is said exactly how it looks, it is often confused. But Shawn with an X trumps Lainey Ishbia. So, all right.
I like confusing people, for the record, too. You know, people won't forget you.
Exactly. Well, so you're definitely unforgettable, and we would love to hear, you know, you mentioned you have CP, cerebral palsy. Maybe you can take us back and just give us a little bit of an overview on how growing up with a disability, with a unique name in New York City, yeah, how how your upbringing kind of impacted the wonderful work that you're doing today.
Yeah, well, anyone who's heard my story before knows that I have to start with my parents. So it was great to give Dad a shout out right from the beginning. But, you know, I think a lot of what informs my reality and how I see the world is the fact that I had artist parents who taught me anything was possible. I mean, they were always, my mom ran her own department at Estee Lauder and Avon. My dad had his own law firm. They treated me like a future leader. And being an only child, I got all the love. And now I say it's my duty to give that love back, right? And when we're talking about privilege, I've been privileged in love. And so I always say privilege itself is not a villain. It's what you do with it or don't do with it. So if you're not using your privilege to make space for somebody else, that's when privilege is a problem, or when you're using it to stay willfully ignorant. But, you know, I think all of us can be allies to each other. And that, you know, a lot of times as disability advocates, I'm sure you guys see this all the time, that, you know, people assume you know about all disabilities. And I think as a true advocate, what we need to do is be hearing from our friends and listening and taking in their stories and making sure that when it's not our experience that we're saying, have you talked to this person who has a lived experience of X? So that we're making sure that, we shouldn't be representing all disabilities. You know, I do believe, you know, my work is even bigger than disability in the sense that I think it's about our humanity and the oneness of humanity, but celebrating the differences inside of that oneness, right? Because we all, you know, we all have something different to offer. Even if we have the same disabilities, not one person has the same exact story.
Exactly. Which is why cerebral palsy is different for everyone, right? We've had another guest on the podcast.
Paola Caruso.
But she, you know, I love that. Like, I can't speak for Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, and Stella certainly can't. We just know from our own experience. So can you give us just a little glimpse before we start talking about the stuff that we really want to talk to you about, which everyone is listening, you guys, hold on, because we've got some great tips and tricks for you for living with disabilities. But give us a little intro of your story, like how did you know you had CP? And what was your life like?
Well, I have to tell you that, you know, obviously being diagnosed at a year old, so I wasn't sitting up at about 5 months. And my Chinese grandmother was a doctor since the 40s. And she knew, she knew that certain milestones were supposed to be happening at a certain age. And I wasn't sitting up. And so they took me to the doctor every month for about 6 months. And it wasn't until my 12-month, you know, checkup that they said, okay, she's got, you know, mild cerebral palsy. You know, my parents didn't even tell me what type of cerebral palsy I had. I had no idea that there was all different types of cerebral palsy either. They just told me it was mild. And I'm not sure, you know, that might've been exactly what the doctor told them at the time. But, you know, my parents said no for good or bad. They said no to grief counseling. And my dad said, she's a happy kid. We're just going to keep raising her this way. And, you know, as soon as I could get in, I mean, he had me on a surfboard at 6 months. You know, I was always, my dad's an athlete. So, you know, he's pretty active. So he taught me to swim, you know, when I was five and stuff like that. I think what I felt as an only child was that I was more because I was different. They really gave me a sense that I could do anything. As soon as I could speak, they were asking me, what are you dreaming about? How can we support you? And I realize now what a luxury and what a gift that was. Because a lot of times in the self-esteem work that I do, which we will get to, you know, I remember once asking the girls to write about their day, and one of the girls said to me, wow, it's so great to write about my day. Nobody's ever asked me how my day was before. And that really opened my eyes. And this is why my first Forbes article was called "Is Leadership a Luxury?" Because I realized that if you're not sure your kid's going to make it through surgery next week, you might not be talking to them about what they're doing in 10 years. And if you're, you know, if you live in a dangerous neighborhood and you're just hoping your kid makes it home safe, you might not be talking to them about what they're doing in 10 years. You're thinking about the next 10 minutes. So, you know, this is not to judge how anyone else was raised or how other parents do it. But I realized that in a lot of ways, what made me want to advocate, you know, I always thought that, you know, the advocacy I saw seemed very angry and very, and there's a lot to be angry about. I want to be clear that I think there's space for every kind of voice in this, in our community. But I just didn't resonate with me because I had a very bubble-like experience of, you know, people, I get to see the kindest side of New Yorkers walking with two ski poles every day. You know, I wouldn't be able to go half a block without somebody opening a door for me or offering, you know, or starting a conversation of some kind. So for me, I was very conscious of what and the people that it brought into my life. Right. And I know that that's not everybody's experience. In fact, I know that that's a rare experience of disability. And I joke, I say that my experience of disability, and not that I've ever been pregnant, but it's kind of like being perpetually pregnant in the way that people treat you, you know. Mm. You know, I have lots of strangers, let's say it's raining, oh, be careful, you know, or like, you know, we'll give up a seat, not on the subway. Somehow all chivalry does disappears when you're in the subway.
Close to die, yeah.
Or in Times Square for some reason. But everywhere outside of Times Square in the subway are generally incredibly kind. In fact, I almost overly so. But because of that, I've received so much kindness even from strangers, not just my parents, that I feel it is my duty to give that back. And also, you know, with the self-esteem work that I do, it really came out of the fact that it really did not sit well with me that anyone would feel like less because of their disability or because they're a woman or any way that they feel different or outside. You know, so the self-esteem work I do isn't just for the disability community. It's for humanity. I hope to see that everyone celebrates their beauty in equal measure. And so that was really the path I was on. And I was very content doing that at NYU. And then I got asked to judge an assistive technology competition through AT&T. I knew nothing about assistive technology. I made that very clear to them. And I think you can relate to this, having lived experience of disability. When your expertise is your lived experience, boy, it opens up your world. So I'm not a technologist, and I ended up doing this. And then, you know, being asked to speak on film, even though I'm not a filmmaker, for Real Abilities, and then joining their film selection committee, and then realizing representation was so important. Not just, let me back up a little. Before I even did my self-esteem classes, I also pitched the Dove campaign, asking them to include people with disabilities in their advertising. And the reason for that was...
Pause for that, because I think that is so... Like, I read that about you and your story.
I watched that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, tell us about that specifically, the campaign and what you did and how old were you? And
yeah, well, you know, the thing is, it's so funny. Everybody always wanted to make me a poster child for something, and I really resisted it because I thought, this is the obvious thing to do. I already call enough attention to myself on these New York City streets. Last thing I need to do is the obvious. And I think what happened for me was my second job ever in New York was for a theater that had 45 members total, 15 with disabilities. And they were actors, studio actors, Kennedy Center award-winning playwrights, writing in their journals about suicide attempts, about body image, about, you know, disability identity. And there was a lot of dysmorphia there. And I looked in front of me and I saw the most gorgeous, charming, beloved people that I'd ever met. And I thought, if this is how they're doing and I look up to them, how's everyone else doing? And, you know, and I wondered, why is it that I know it sounds strange, but I didn't, you to your question earlier, I didn't even really, even though I knew I had cerebral palsy from as soon as I could remember. I never realized I was that different. Like, I think there is something generational where I think it used to be at least 20 plus years ago when anyone that was growing up and be, you know, and 100 years ago, anyone that was growing up different had to adjust to their environment and be scrappy. I think in the last 10 to 15 years with social media and our awareness of so many different communities, now there's an attitude of I'm here, you're supposed to accommodate me. But I think that that is relatively new. Right. You know, but I think the positive part of that is I genuinely did not, I knew I was different, but I genuinely, outside of the obvious, the ski poles, thought I'm just like everybody else. And I remember being 9 years old, walking through my lobby where we had a floor to ceiling length mirror my entire life. And I only then looked in the mirror and saw my left knee went in a little bit as I was skiing past. And I was like, wait a minute. It never occurred to me. I thought I walked just like everyone else, just with poles too. And when I saw my knee go in, I was like, oh, I am different. Like, I do walk differently. You know, that's how much of a bubble. And you could say it's delusional. You could say many things. But honestly, I think in a lot of ways, there was a lot of benefit to really not feeling that different. I knew I was different.
John, it's already so interesting to me. I mean, one of your parents is Asian, one of your parents is Jewish. I'm also Jewish, by the way. So that alone is like makes you different, right?
I mean,
but yet you're talking about your disability. Like, you have so many things that make you unique. All of us do, but yours are very visible.
Yeah.
Okay, we have to go back to the Dove campaign. You have to tell us about that. But also, what are ski poles? Like, people who are listening and don't know.
Okay, yeah. What does that mean? And it kind of feeds into when we talk about travel later, it'll feed into that too. But no, but I promise I was getting there. My point was, my point was that I really was confused as to why I was the only one here feeling like my disability was an asset. Right. And for many years, it felt like that was the easy part of my life. I cut the lines at Disney World, the airport, et cetera. And I thought, and it was actually, I mean, I know it sounds actually kind of like I must have been under a rock, but I, in a way I was, a very big New York City rock. Let's say 30 rock since it's, but no, So going back to the Dove campaign, the reason that I was thinking about this is, again, I saw my friends struggling. And I said, okay, I think it's probably because they didn't have control over who their parents were or if they went to the right schools, which all of that, you know, my parents really did their research. I went to UCP, United Cerebral Palsy, which meant that in preschool, I went to school with kids who were just like me. We were all different. But, you know, even when I was mainstreamed, quote unquote, later on, being the only girl with ski poles or the only girl with cerebral palsy in my class, even though there was one other girl who happened to be, by the way, Asian and had CP also. So I think that helped too. We were, you know,
representation. Yeah.
I mean, the fact that the one other person was, in a way, we're very different, but also having similar backgrounds. So she was one of my best friends, but they made sure to put one of us in each class so that, I don't know, for our individuality, for our development. But even when I was in situations where I was the only, you know, visibly disabled person, I never felt alone. And I never... And because I didn't feel that different, I'm like, well, no, I belong here. And so it's going to sound very strange. You know, I was very popular in elementary school. I was very popular in junior high. And it was only in high school when I started to count myself out that I started to feel ostracized and not welcome. And it's because I loved everybody. And so this idea that I couldn't be loved back was really disturbing to me. But when I look at that, in a way, I bullied myself. I think, and people responded to how I felt about it in kind. So going back to Dove for a second. So what happened for me was that I really started to think about how come, yeah, I think I just wanted to talk about the high school part because I don't want people to think that I just never had self-doubt or I never was insecure because I was incredibly, because I was looking at validation through other people, which is where I had gotten it before. And it stopped working for me. And I realized that that's not enough, right? We can't base ourselves over how much we're liked or disliked. But going back to Dove for a second, you know, when I realized that you don't have control over what schools you go to, what kind of support systems you have, I said, where else do we get our sense of self-esteem? And you could answer a lot of things like media in general, but I think the answer that came at the time was the beauty industry. And Dove had already done beautifully inclusive things for, you know, women of all sizes and older women. And so to me, including people with disabilities in their campaign was not only the next step, but knowing how my friends were doing, it was incredibly critical to their survival, in my opinion. So so I didn't really, you know, I had no experience. I had no advocacy experience at all. But all I knew was that if I didn't do it, who would? So I filmed a minute and 23 second video in my mother's living room with a friend from church who did it for free. We had zero budget. If you saw how messy that room actually was outside of the I have some behind this, and I always laugh when I see the behind the scenes photos because I think people are like, what? But anyway, and I made it for one person. I didn't say, I mean, this was the early days of YouTube, and it didn't even occur to me this idea of going viral. You know, right. I made it for one person that apparently no longer worked at Dove, which he shortly told me. But my cousin saw the video and she said, you know, you already made the video. Why don't you just share it on Facebook? And so I did. And I sent it to a few Facebook groups that had some themes connected to the video in it. And my last line was, I forget the line now, but the word positive, the word positive was in it. So I sent it to a group called Positively Positive and they posted it on their group. And that video got, I think 16,000 views in 4 days. And
wow,
that's not a lot. I mean, it's not Justin Bieber viral, but I got letters from the Philippines. I got letters.
That's so cool.
From Australia, a man with AIDS for 30 years saying, you know, what it meant to him, a woman with rheumatoid arthritis. And I have to say, in that moment, I realized how small I was looking at disability. I was really thinking about mobility disabilities when I made that video.
As most people do.
And I will tell you, the video was not captioned. The video was not audio described. Because I didn't even know about those things at the time.
How did Dove get it?
Well, guess what? They got it from two different, I knew two different sources, showed them the video that were, they already had Dove as a client. I won't mention them by name. But all I can tell you is after they met with them, I never heard from them again. I never heard how Dove felt about it. I never got a response from Dove directly. It just died on the vine. And I actually think in a way it was meant to be, because I think, when I first started this, you know, Dove was the end all be all. And when they said no, I realized, wow, this is so much bigger than one beauty company. And the fact that the majority of people actually supporting the video had no disabilities at all meant there was something more universal that people were getting. And in a way, it was a gift to me that Dove said no at that time, because I think I could have just gotten very focused on that one thing. It could have been a sort of like a star, a shooting star in the sky and then gone.
Right.
But because it didn't happen, and other things happened, like being handed classes at NYU, having never taught a day in my life, by the way. So it opened my world in a way that was unexpected, and it did not go. And this is why I'm always telling, there's no such thing as failure. If you're still here, you haven't failed. And you know, I was a telemarketer in my previous life.
Oh, wow. So you really have a a thick skin for rejection.
It's basically I was going to say when no is 98% of your day, you're not so afraid of it anymore. And yes means so much more when that's your reality as well. So
we'll be right back.
This is George, Fred, and Jason, the co-leaders of Speak, interrupting to say that we hope you're enjoying this episode, but please make sure to check out our new show, The Speak Podcast, another great show produced by Launchpad 516 Studios. New episodes available every week on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
Each Speak talk is about 6 to 10 minutes in length, and the talks are given in storytelling format. There are 3 key moments in each Speak talk: the moment of truth, the moment of transformation, and the moment of impact. We host pop-up events all over the world, and now we're bringing our talks to your device.
Join us on the Speak Podcast as our speakers step onto the stage and into the spotlight with impactful ideas and stories.
We'll let you get back to the show you were listening to, another great podcast from Launchpad 516 Studios.
You're tuning in to Embrace It with Lainey and Estella, brought to you by Launchpad 516 Studios. You know, I love your passion, and obviously it's not just the beauty industry that you've put that passion to work for. You are a Forbes contributing writer, and you've been featured on the White House blog. And I think in some of our previous conversations, you really seem like someone who just can see and identify a problem and then look for solutions and put your energy towards what's needed at that moment. Is that accurate?
I think when people come to me and ask, in fact, someone did, that they're in one particular area and they wanted to break out. And I said, well, where do you see the need areas? Because that's where you need to go. Even when I started with the self-esteem, I was content doing that. And then I realized, wait, there's assistive tech, there's adaptive fashion. And then I have to say, on a positive note, that the beauty industry finally, within the last 2 years, has gotten the memo, and they're playing catch up and doing it fast. So there is hope. You know, it didn't happen in the moment that I wanted it, and didn't happen with Dove. But even Dove has improved.
Eventually, yeah.
I think they could be doing more, but I'm glad that they're doing anything, to be honest. And you know what? I mean, that was more than 10 years ago. So, you know, leadership changes and attitudes change. And I think that, honestly, there is a wave of change. I've always said that I thought disability inclusion was inevitable, but that doesn't mean we can't be a catalyst for it.
Yeah. So, speaking of things that you know, when you see the need, as Estella said, you make things happen, you find solutions. So there's so many things that you are knowledgeable about in the world. And we're going to include for sure info for everybody who's listening on your self-esteem workshops and your articles in Forbes and all the stuff that you're doing. But can you talk about the need when it comes to transportation for people with disabilities and what you and how that came about for you and what you're doing about it?
Yeah. And speaking of the need, I mean, I wasn't planning on being a transportation advocate. I can tell you that much. But, you know, after 22 years on AccessRide, when, you know, you have to wait 2 hours or you get left behind or you're 5 hours on the same vehicle because you're dropping off so many people on all boroughs. I mean, I went through so many things that I actually, when I say 22 years, I took a 5-year break because of how stressful it was when I was in college. No, because, you know, if you're only home for the break and you only have, let's say, a week and a half with your family, you don't have 2 hours to wait every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, you know what, for my mental health, I've got to just, and, you know, keep in mind, I was on AccessRide even before GPS. So it was even worse. Which seems almost unfathomable for people. But I think it wasn't until I was left by an Uber in, 2019, I have to look. I was left by an Uber. My best friend and I, a walker. Mm-hmm. And we were leaving my uncle's house in Naples, Florida. And this guy had come, 15 minutes out of the way to go to this gated community that we were in, took one look at us and backed out of the driveway. My uncle said, "Where are you going?" He just said, "I canceled the ride." I had been passed by, cab drivers before. And always my attitude was, if they don't want me, I don't want them. But this is different. This person had my name. They came all this way out and still bailed. But my first thought was, he did not speak back to my uncle. I really felt that in this case, this guy just had no clue what to do with two of us. Right. And so I called Uber and I said, "Listen, I don't want this guy fired. I want him trained." Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure he has a family, and it was pretty clear he was not from the United States. Mm-hmm. I was actually looking forward to him because he had the same name as one of my best friends who's Haitian. And I was really looking forward. That's another part of my New York experience. Cab drivers, doormen, they're all my best friends. They're the guys that help me the most. So I've always tried to return the favor in some way. And I have the greatest conversations in taxis and Ubers. So,
Okay, Sean, you are so likable, and I I'm sure that you have besties all over New York City and everywhere because you're super likable and obviously bubbly, but you couldn't have been just standing there. That Uber, the nice guy who you saw in the picture with, that you wanted to talk to, he pulled away. I mean, weren't you pissed? I mean,
I was shocked. Oh, and my uncle, the reason I actually didn't get pissed is that my uncle was so upset that I was busy calming him down. I said, "Listen, because my thought is I don't want anyone who doesn't want me. So let him go, but at the same time, I was thinking about the bigger picture, and I realized that I must not have been the first person. And in fact, if you read that article, what I did was I collected up all the experiences that I could from my friends on Facebook and elsewhere, because I was shocked how not shocked everybody was. And somebody I know, for example, Haben Girma wrote about the fact that she was left by three Ubers in one night in New York City because of her service dog. Mm. I've since learned that also when you have a service dog that a lot of times it's also within the Islamic religion that they don't want dogs in their car. There's a religious reason behind that. Now, I don't know exactly why. What I've learned time and time again, whether it was the Dove pitch or assistive tech or fashion, that every time that you have an issue, there's 100,000 people behind you that have the same issue that have not had a chance to share their story. And so, when this Uber thing happened, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just sharing a kind of crappy thing that happened to me and my best friend, but really talking about what is the larger issue here. And my shock was not the fact that this happened, because of course I've been left by cabs, passing by before, but it was more Uber's lack of response and their refusal. They actually told me we cannot train them because we don't recognize them as employees. And so it became more of an issue of what is the larger problem here that we're not addressing. And it's not just Uber. It's I think many different forms of transportation So that was the beginning of that. And then, there's an incredible program that I was a part of. The good news, and it's also kind of bad news because they're trying to cut it. But the Accessoride, in response to their horrible service, created a pilot program where they allowed 1,200 of us to travel same day by the way, if you're on traditional paratransit, you do not have same day options. So this was revolutionary. You call a car.
Wait. For us non-New Yorkers, what does paratransit mean? Like, I don't even know.
For people, even access a ride as well, in case people don't use that.
Yeah. Access a ride is the New York City name. Paratransit is the national name for basically, you know, there's many parts of America that are not ADA compliant, especially New York with our subway system. Right. And so Access a Ride and paratransit nationally were created to, you know, address that gap and to fail safe the fact that they're, you know, not legally, you know, ADA compliant. So the way that paratransit works in New York City, you have to book 1 to 2 days in advance before 5 p.m. You need exact times, exact locations. It cannot change. There's no such thing as a last minute emergency. You also can't guarantee, you know, if you pick someone up and it takes 2 hours to get them to their location. So even if you have a pickup time and let's say you get stuck in traffic anyway, you're kind of SOL. So I mean, the traditional system, I think anyone that's telling you it's good probably works for Accessoride, because everybody else knows that their nickname is Stressoride for a reason. Yeah. And so they create, but here was the good news. They created a program which used an Uber-like app. In fact, now, they only recently allowed us to use Uber apps. You could use an Uber-like app called Arrow for taxis, or Curb at one point was part of it. And you could book a car within minutes. It was unlimited and available to us, and it was still, on average, cheaper. Those blue and white vans you see in New York, which are the traditional accessoride vans, cost $150 per person per ride to operate.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
And so even being unlimited, it was an average of $47 per person per ride for the other vehicles, which would show up on time or close to it. And so, you know, it was honestly, New York is the greatest city in the world. It makes sense to me. I'm sorry, I'm biased. If you live anywhere else, I'm biased. But I mean, we have the largest transportation system in the world here. And so you cannot compare it to other cities. I hear this comparison all the time. The truth is that there's a reason we call it a New York Minute. And I do take umbrage to the fact that our New York Minutes seem to count less than others. And this program really was the antidote to that. And they are now constantly trying to cut it and tell people it's terrible and that it actually doesn't work, which I'm sorry, I'm here to be the bearer of truth, which is, you know, the cheapest option, which is also the most efficient to me, should be not only not cut, but expanded.
The standard, yeah.
Yeah. So that was another, but I'm saying all this to say that ended up becoming another area of advocacy. And I got over, and if you guys want to sign the petition, it's still active.
Yes, please. We'll share it as well.
We have 8,100 signatures supporting, you know, not cutting this program. But for me, even beyond this particular program, my question is, if you're not requiring everybody to travel by bus or subway, 1 to 2 days in advance. Imagine if you had to book your subway rides 1 to 2 days in advance. If you're not requiring that of everyone, then why are you requiring it of us?
Absolutely.
Right.
But on the Uber app nowadays, like the Uber and Lyft app, isn't there a way for people to indicate that they have a disability accessible and that they want an accessible vehicle?
Absolutely.
So how do they, if like people don't know that are listening, like they just go on the app and that's where
you can look for what's called a WAV or WAVE vehicle. It stands for wheelchair accessible vehicle. You know, I don't know if there's like a way to say I am disabled, but you have the comments section where you can do that. But there's certainly, they do mark wheelchair accessible vehicles. It's usually at the very end when you're scrolling down. And I'm happy to report that over New Year's, the wheelchair accessible vehicle I took with my first grade best friend, the one I was telling you about, the other Asian girl with CP. Mm-hmm. We took it to my second and fourth grade best friend's house, and it was cheaper than the regular vehicle. So
nice. So win-win for your friends. And
yes.
I think I will definitely share the petition and get more support for that.
Thank you.
But what happens when it's a more personal interaction? And I'm sure there's been times where you have had to really advocate for yourself, whether that's in a vehicle or other modes of transportation. Can you speak a little bit to that? And I think maybe provide any tips or, yeah, you know, things that people can do to make those experiences less stressful.
Yeah. So for those listening to me, you might be saying, well, she's a Forbes contributor. You know, I've worked with the mayor's office for people with disabilities. I will acknowledge that this is part of why I've used my voice beyond this, is that I realize I have platforms and I have wonderful people in my life who are responsive and in positions to help me. So I think, though, even if you don't have that, the wonderful thing, going back to my point about social media earlier, I think we now, whether you have perceived, whether you feel empowered or not, anyone can start a YouTube channel. Anyone can, you know, start a blog. Anyone can tweet, or I guess X out. I can't believe he stole my initials speaking. But anyone can, you know, use what's out there. And I mean, we see everyday people going viral all the time for reasons, because people are passionate about whatever they're talking about, and supporting it. So you don't have to be, someone with, or you could start a podcast like you guys did. But there's so many ways for everyday people, to, no matter where you come from, if you have the internet, you have now a platform. It used to be, you know, 50 years ago, if ABC, NBC, or CBS didn't cover it, you didn't, you know what I mean? It just wasn't a thing. Right.
Yeah, but Sean, like the everyday person who's listening, not everyone wants to do such a big thing. They don't necessarily want to be, you know, a spokesperson and you know, create a YouTube channel or make a big thing. I get a lot of emails from people like, what do I do at the TSA line? I don't have...
Oh, you mean in the moment? That's a different question.
I don't have, like, let's say they don't have what I have. What do you call it? Get through faster. Like they wear braces on their legs. They're worried that they're going to go off, that they have to show them, that they have to take off their shoes. They're uncomfortable. And they, let's say they feel like very, you know, uncomfortable in general, and they have a bad experience with a TSA officer. Like they don't want to go on YouTube. What do they do on an immediate level and in the moment and then afterwards? Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I think there's a few layers to this question. So I'm going to try to answer each layer, which is, first, I think it's getting comfortable with what it is you know about yourself and you need. Because the truth is, a lot of us with disabilities, let's face it, want to assume that people are mind readers and know exactly how to treat us the minute they see us, which would be great in a utopian world. But the truth is that, yeah, I think some of it is practicing. How do you express exactly what it is you need? And if there's going to be something where you already anticipate there might be issues, or you've had issues in the past, you know, getting something like a doctor's note, or getting, you know, if you're not good at explaining it, you know, maybe finding, first of all, I do think for those who can, you know, practicing that and having it come from you is important. But let's say someone is nonverbal or what have you, you know, either having something written out or someone who can,
And I will
tell you though, I do think that, you know, we obviously want to advocate for as much independence as possible. But the truth is that every person on this planet needs help. And there are going to be times where, you know, if you can't do it, you're going to, like, if I don't ask for help at the buffet line, I will not eat. Because I walk with two poles, my hands are occupied, there's no way I can carry that plate. And so I, you know, and if there's, you know, I can use stairs from time to time. There are times where the only way up is a couple of stairs and I need to ask a complete stranger for help up those stairs. Now, I know that a lot of people don't have that option. I want to acknowledge that. But I think being able to be comfortable with what you know about yourself, and there will be people who just don't get it. And that's exactly what happened to me at the TSA recently, which is why you guys reached out to me, right? was that, you know, this woman looked at my adapted ski poles, which are my assistive devices that I've been using forever. And for the first time in 30 years, tried to separate me from them, which is actually goes against the passenger's bill of rights for people with disabilities, because you're not supposed to separate anyone under any circumstance from their assistive devices. And when I said, these are the only assistive devices I can use, she said, no, you made these this way. And like, she didn't just, my issue and the reason why I said something is, you know, if this was the policy, which it wasn't, by the way, I have had that clarified. But if this was the policy, there was a kind or polite way to express it. But she genuinely treated me like I was bringing AK-47s onto this flight. And so if anyone wants to hear the whole story of that, since I know we don't have much time left, you can listen to the Women's E-News podcast that I did where I detail everything that happened there. But I think for me, what it highlighted was, you know, this whole experience and how people were so kind to me afterwards and shared their own stories. I realized that, again, it comes down to this training thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in case you want to know, it was very confusing after the fact. When I did file this complaint, I got a form letter that basically told me it could happen again because my ski poles were adapted. And because ski poles are traditionally sharp, which, by the way, the ends of my ski poles are no sharper than a pen, I checked. And so pens are allowed on planes. So I definitely did not agree with that assessment. And then about a week later, I got another letter saying that my ski poles were okay. And this, again, talks about sometimes these institutions are almost too big for their own good. And so I was getting ready with a lawyer's letter and all this stuff when this other letter came through. And they did inform me that they were sending the previous letter said, in you know, aggressive cases, we will train, but did not give me any insight as to what happened to this lady or to JFK crew at all, which it didn't make me feel like any change was happening.
And anything was resolved, yeah.
And the thing is, I don't want to ruin anybody's life, but I just want to make sure that this doesn't happen to any of my brothers and sisters and family with disabilities. So that was really my concern, really, in doing this. And so I got this other letter where they basically said that materials were sent to the management at JFK. I still didn't know what that meant, by the way.
Materials, yeah. It's very vague terminology.
So I get this, yeah. And at least they have officially told me that as long as I communicate to the TSA agent that these are assistive devices, that they are approved to go forward. So I have a piece of paper that says,
okay,
which was progress. But I guarantee you, I do suspect that that would not have happened if I had not gone to Channel 11 first. Mm-hmm. So to your point and your question earlier, you may not want to do these things, but sometimes that is the only way. And if you are really shy, then you have to write people like me and Emily Ladau and Haben Gurma and all these people who are, let us talk about it if you want us to. You know, I want to hear from people what their stories are and share those. So it doesn't necessarily have to come from you, although I think it is better when it comes from you.
I think that's a great point, because you're absolutely right. There are so many advocates out there in with those channels, with those connections tied to the media, who can, like you said, continue to collect these stories and show them as evidence to this systemic problem and the systemic need for accessibility training across all forms of transportation. And I mean, across every industry, there's just, it's just people don't know what to do. And so they do nothing. And that is not an option anymore.
Well, and here's the thing is that you don't even know who you're helping. It's not about you. And and to your earlier point, I was the most stage frightened person you could imagine. I didn't want to do this. I was so terrified. But you know, when I realized it wasn't about me, was that was when I had the courage and the strength. Again, because that people-pleasing girl from age 15 could not fathom the idea of you know, not being loved by everybody. But I realized I had to risk that in order to actually make any sort of change. And I had to stop caring so much about what other people thought and caring more about what I could do to help others. And as long as I was focused on service, then it was something that we could really, you know, that's what gave me courage, strength, and suddenly my fear of speaking went away. Because it's not about me, right?
I can totally relate. I think it's, you know, it's like I never wanted to start a podcast. I don't like the sound of my own voice. Lady doesn't either.
You have such a pretty voice, though. It's really high.
Thank you.
I never listened to a single one of our episodes because I don't like
mine.
I know. I don't. It's like seeing yourself on camera. You're like, ah. And by the way, it has nothing to do with low side. It's just literally, it's just I cringe.
But that's just the human brain. But I think to your point, it's when we step out of our own ego and our own kind of fear about how we're going to be judged and take it as this is something bigger than myself. And I owe it to, you know, I owe it to be of service in this world. I owe it to give my disability meaning and my experience meaning and put it to work and open doors for other people. So I love the work that you're doing. And we're going to put probably about 50 or 60 links in the, I'm not kidding.
I think that we started out before we started, like turned on the on button saying, oh, we might need to do a part two. So you're the perfect, like actually one of the only guests that we've had where I'm like, I'm still left with many questions. Rarely happens. So
because I'm long-winded.
I have a, like a lot of experience, a lot to say. You're super interesting. And we definitely need to have you back to talk more about this topic of advocacy and transportation, but also all the other stuff you have in your little vault of
portfolio.
I
would be so happy.
Yeah. So we're going to put links to how people can reach you because they certainly won't be able to spell your name. So definitely. but we like to end all of our podcasts, Sean, by, and we're getting really good at remembering you too, is asking you, what does Embrace It mean to you?
Well, actually, I was going to push back on what you said about people not wanting to do things because to me, nobody can tell your story like you can. And that's why I would actually say that if you're uncomfortable, lean into that. And that's part of embracing it too. It's like, okay, you don't have to be an extrovert to share your story. And I think, you know, going back to Give Beauty Wings, my nonprofit, which is all about putting our beauty to action, is everybody has something to offer. I have the most gorgeous parents in the world, and it made me so insecure because I was like, oh my God, they're so popular. They're so smart. They're so on top of it. How could I come out of her? Like, I look
at
what?
My kids must be, I can hear my kids saying the same thing right now. I mean, who says that about their parents? You are like a dream child.
Oh, I think my mom would beg to differ with you. You know, I am a daddy's
part of this podcast. Sending it to Will and Blake, and I'm going to be like, look, is this how you talk about me? Oh my God, I'm sorry. But
what I have to
embrace it means to you that people should tell their stories. And
at least, I mean, you don't, I don't think telling your stories is the first step. I think embracing it allows you to be able to do that. But I think for me, what I realized is that the beauty in me does not take away from the beauty in you and vice versa. So the fact that my parents are gorgeous and so together and like, I like to call them aliens because sometimes I don't think they're human, although they definitely, you know, obviously have flaws, beautiful flaws. But what I realized is that just because they're beautiful doesn't make me or you or anyone else less beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times we can look, and this connects to your point that you could look at someone like Emily Liddell and say, well, I could never do what she does. Or you could look at someone like Jillian Mercado in a modeling campaign and say, well, I could never be a model like that. You don't have to be. That's the beauty. And embracing it means embracing what you bring to the table. And sometimes it takes some digging and self-discovery to get to that nitty-gritty. You know, I never realized I was a positive person. People always told me that and I didn't get it because I had, you know, I had moments of depression. I've had breakups. I've had, you know, my heart broken. And so I didn't say, well, what's positive? But now I embrace that part of myself as one of the things I am. Right? And it doesn't have to be everything, and you don't have to be defined by one thing, but embracing it is embracing all of it, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the beauty of the good, the bad, and the ugly within it. And so give beauty wings and embrace it. I think, I mean, that's why I'm so excited to work with you guys, is all about putting what beauty we have to action. And if you don't know that your story can matter to someone else and you don't tell it, I mean, imagine if Whitney Houston just sang in her shower. You know what I mean? So let's not sing in the shower. Let's take the singing out of the shower. You know what I mean?
I would have had no songs to lip sync to in the '80s if she stayed in the shower because she was my girl.
Yeah, but and we're not all, and it's not, someone could say, well, I don't sing as well. It doesn't matter. The point is that you're singing. The point is that there's music, that we all have music in our hearts and minds and something unique about us. No matter how many people we have with the same disability, not one person has the same experience. You could put two identical twins together. They still don't have the same experience. So every story matters. That's what embracing it is for me.
I love that.
I can never answer quickly. You notice that, Lainey? I'm sorry. Not sorry.
No. Don't apologize. We love having you and we're going to have you again. But yeah. I mean, honestly, it's like, the most beautiful, perfect answer from the most positive person I think I've ever met, actually. So I'm just very excited so that when we are done with this podcast, I'm running and calling my children and I'm quoting you exactly. But with that said, it was so great having you, meeting you, Sean with an X, and everyone else in the world needs to know you too, if they don't already. So we're going to make sure to have you again and to get the word out about what you're doing and who you are.
Yes. And I want to hear from, please, talking about sharing your stories, if you're not comfortable sharing it outwards, at least send me a message. I want to hear your story. So anyone that's listening, I'm so happy to connect with this community and we're here to uplift each other. And I would love to be here for every single person on this podcast listening right now. And for you ladies. So to be continued on our next podcast, huh?
Thank you so much, Sean. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Bye, Estella. Bye, Sean. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Hey, Embracers. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Embrace It podcast, brought to you by Launchpad 516 Studios, executive produced by George Andriopoulos and hosted by Lainey Ishbia and Estella Lugo. Our music and sound effects are licensed through Epidemic Sound. Embrace It is hosted with Buzzsprout.
Do you have a disability-related topic you'd love for us to feature? Or could someone you know be a fabulous guest on our show? We would love to hear your comments and feature them on our next podcast. So leave us a voicemail, or you can even send us a text to 631-517-0066.
Make sure to subscribe to this feed wherever podcasts are available and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. Follow us at @embraceit_podcast on Instagram. And make sure to follow all the great podcasts produced by Launchpad 516 Studios.
We hope you join us next time and continue to embrace it.